If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now? Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mother's Bathroom Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcast and join me for the story behind the song.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for checking out the episode, making your way here however you did. Especially thanks to you all who subscribe to the series. Of course, if you want to keep up with your favorite artist or discover some new ones or even just know what's happening in the music world and you're not subscribed, now's a great time to do that. Of course, you can probably do that wherever you're listening right now, but also in the major spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Just type in Kyle Meredith With. We'll deliver brand new episodes to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I'm Kyle Meredith. Today I'm going to be talking with Jenny Beth. She has a new record out called To Live Is To Love. Now, you know Jenny is the front woman of Savages. We're going to be discussing her working with Nine Inch Nails' Atticus Ross on this record, taking some inspiration from Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot, and diving into some pretty heavy themes too. Guilt, sexuality, religion. She says the core of the record is my shameful faults. So, you know, that's a good place to start right there. Jenny Beth is also up to a ton of things outside of just record making these days too, you know, whether it's acting or hosting a radio show or writing a book. And we'll talk about all that too. The book is called CALM, C-A-L-M. It stands for Crimes Against Love Memories. It ties in with the record as a photo journal. And we'll hear how the two intersect. And, you know, doing so much as she does, you know, she says one of her heroes is Henry Rollins, who keeps his schedule plenty busy as well. So all of that and more, let's jump into it. Discussing the record To Live Is To Love. It's Kyle Meredith with Jenny Beth.
Hi there.
Well, first off, my compliments on To Love Is To Live. I mean, what a powerful piece of art that you've put out there, which, you know, you tend to do, but it's not always a given. And it sounds like this has been a labor of love, no pun intended right there. With it being such a strong thematic record, did you go into this with a vision, from the beginning?
Not really, because that's how I had been working in the past, especially in Savages. I've always had like a sort of a vision and a goal, and all of my efforts were trying to keep everyone and everything towards that direction, you know, aiming to the same direction. But this time I wanted to do things very differently from what I had done before. I wanted to not repeat myself. I wanted to change things. So I purposely didn't want to know. I purposely step in the shoes of sort of an explorer and go into the dark caves with just a lamp torch and just try to see what I could find and not stumble too many times, you know, which I did. But, you know, it was all about exploring new territories. So it was very different to whatever I had done before, and I didn't start with any preconceptions. What I tried to follow was the gut feeling of discomfort almost, or if I didn't know what it was, if I heard something but I'd never heard myself like this, or I wasn't sure what is this, then I would keep it. I think that was my only sort of guide. If that makes sense. Compass.
Yeah. Right. You know, even having down to a different palette of instruments sounds like it would be somewhat what you're talking about too. And I know we'll get to more of the themes, the actual lyrical themes here in a minute. But does having different instruments, does that actually change the way you write a song versus how you had in the past?
Yeah, I mean, those instruments came as arrangements, but that definitely happened to me when I worked with Atticus Ross from Nine Inch Nails on the opener, I Am. Me and Johnny Hostile had written the song, and there were elements already there, like the clock and the idea of the two parts, the idea of the dark voice, the lyrics, the melodies. But what Atticus did was to introduce a whole new level of intensity, which was something that I was very used to in Savages, but obviously I didn't want to repeat the same sound as Savages, you know, because Savages is great and right. Doesn't need to be repeated. But so Atticus Ross was used strings and layers of it and sound, and mixed with guitar sounds but they're so buried you can't hear them, and build a sort of a wall like this, or this sort of real big tension. And I was glad when I heard it, because suddenly it was the same intensity but played with different instruments, and that's exactly what I wanted to try to do for this record.
And Atticus, I mean, he's got obviously history with it, but and not that it's anything brand new, but the idea of using instruments that are maybe known for beautiful sounds and making them very dark and very tense, I mean, that's a nice trick right there.
Yeah, because when he said, I'm going to use strings on the song, he immediately said, not Hollywood strings, don't worry, we're not going lush, you know, it's like punk strings, he said. And I was like, yeah, sold. I love that idea.
But at some point, the themes must have started being noticeable as how they are connecting, because it looks like, you know, it looks like at some point you did lean into it. When did that occur?
Very early on. I mean, lyrically, for instance, all the lyrics, I got them quite soon. I mean, my first part of exploration is always a pen and a paper, you know, and so lyrically, I had the themes pretty early on. I had the song Human, I had The Man. I knew Innocence. I knew what I wanted to talk about. And the starting point for it was, I'm going to put right in the center of the record, right at the beginning, let's say, but the core of the record is going to be my shameful faults, like the things that I hide away, the things that I would never want anybody to know about me, and try to isolate those and try to turn them into songs. And I feel that if I do that, that could be the core and the starting point to then elevate myself. And it's sort of a journey, you know. And I think the people I love in life are people who are able to admit their own shit, you know, their own mistakes. And that's why one of the first lines of the record is, you know, I've made some mistakes, you know, I've acknowledging, you know, that you're not a perfect being, that you're complex and you're layered and you're full of contradictions. And I think that's the sort of depiction of humanity I wanted to show, but it was also part of my own experience of feeling like, at that point, I felt really like a bad person. I felt flawed, and, you know, and I needed to exercise those things. And I still feel like that. I just think you have to live with jealousy all your life. You have to live with all these things that haunt you and try to always turn you into sort of a, you know, bad person. But I felt that if I try to do a personal record, there's no way I'm going to do a record where I'm not honest about those dark sides of mine, because otherwise I would feel like a cheat, you know.
And I assume the idea is to take the power away from that guilt and thinking that you're you know, making mistakes.
Yeah, and guilt is kind of one of the themes of the record. I think it was parts of, you know, Catholic guilt and things that I've been raised with, although I was never baptized. I think you don't need to be baptized to be raised in, you know, to be sort of influenced by religion. My family is religious, but parts of my family anyway. But I think, yeah, it's trying to create a new narrative, isn't it? Like a new way to overcome those things. Like in the past few months, you know, with everything that's happened with confinement, I think I'm not the only one who would say that I wish I had a God I could pray to, you know. Yeah. I wish I had something, a belief, because that helps tremendously, and I could feel how it would help me, but I don't. So I need to find other ways to overcome those things. So there was a song, actually, which didn't make it to the record, where we used to say, the universe is my religion, you know, and parts of the record is also shifting perspective from the infinitely small to infinitely big. I was very influenced by Carl Sagan, the physicist, astrophysicist, and his text about the Earth seen from very far away in the universe called the pale blue dot. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of a different perspective on our own imperfections and violence and, you know, power as well. I felt was interesting.
Yeah, the pale blue dot, that's been something I've thought about quite a lot, especially with everything happening right now.
Yeah.
On the ground here, because you know, you hear about that, getting away and suddenly all of that sort of washes away, you know, the further out you get. It's obviously a nice, something you can apply rather easily metaphorically, whenever you need to. But I did want to go back to, you know, the raised Catholic part, because I was raised Catholic. I left when I was 13, never really looked back again, although maybe like you, I still have family that's very religious and everything. But the history of religion, and I'll even specifically say Catholicism and the suppression of sexuality and how that has caused a lot. I mean, there's a relationship. There's a history of Catholicism and sexuality that seems to go back, you know, and it always, the way I looked at it anyway, was because of the suppression. There is an obvious rebellion that comes out of that for a lot of people. For you to write about sex and intimacy the way you do, do you think that's part of it because of any kind of Catholic guilt and suppression?
Maybe. I mean, it's also part of, you know, my life and my own experiences and the people I meet and I know. And I think if I wanted to write a record about what life means to me or what human beings are, there's no way sexuality is not a part of that, you know. So it's as natural as that for me, you know, to mention it in the record, because it's part of life, you know. And as, you know, regarding who teaches us sexuality, you know, there isn't really, you know, is it religion? Is it our education? Is it school? Is it pornography? Like, who is teaching sexuality? Is it your parents? It's a bit of everything, isn't it? But they definitely don't have necessarily the right approach. Sexuality is a very intimate thing, isn't it? And there's almost no guides and no mentors, it's something that you have to find out only by doing and only by throwing yourself into the experience and finding out by yourself how you feel. So it feels dangerous because of that, but it's almost the only way, you know. I think it's a very creative part of being a human. And I think imagination plays a very important role in sexuality. And that's something I really wanted to portray, not only in the album, because I think the album is not only about sexuality. It talks about it, but it's really not the main subject. So I wrote a book called Khan, Crimes Against Love Memories, which is very niche in its theme because it's essentially about sexuality and erotica. And so
that's really interesting the way you worded that too, because I don't think I've ever put it together that it is the most intimate thing that we could do, and there really isn't anyone there to kind of guide. I know that, you know, when I was young, I picked most things up, of course, from schoolyard friends and things like that.
Yeah.
And TV, you know, cable television. And
yeah,
that's and there it is, as you said, the most intimate way. I mean, it's very easy to become warped isn't the right idea, but misrepresented in the intimacy,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah,
absolutely.
You brought up the book. I'll ask about that real quick, because it is a companion piece. As you said, the album isn't specifically all about that, but touches on it. So you have this. Where did that idea come from to have a companion piece like that? And was it meant to be seen as a whole project?
No, I mean, it wasn't meant to be as a whole. It kind of came because I was bored between recording sessions of To Love Is To Live, and I couldn't really write any more lyrics. I was done with lyrics, and it felt impossible for me to write more lyrics for any other projects, actually. Anytime people would contact me for collaborations, I was like, oh no, I don't know what to write. I can't write any more lyrics anymore. It would seem like really a small format. And I felt that writing prose suddenly liberated me. It was like moving from a studio flat to a three-bedroom flat. I was like, oh my God, I've got room to move, to express myself, and it felt great. And the subject of fantasies and sexuality was kind of because I was really into the magical realism style of writing from South American writers like Borges, and it felt that it was a great way to mix, you know, talking about fantasies and mixing them with this sort of magical elements, and the idea of imagination playing a really great deal into shaping fantasies, and you know. And it felt just exciting to write about and freeing, and I could really do or say whatever I wanted. And I think in books, actually, you can go much further in explorations and surrealist ideas, and also talk philosophically about things, because the book is a collection of dialogues. So there's six monologues and six dialogues. So it's people talking about their sexuality, about their own experiences. And there's a lot of me and my conceptions about things, but there's also a cross about different things and people I've met. And the book is also a collaboration with photographs that have been taken by my partner, Johnny Hostile, which talk about the same subject of intimacy and freedom.
But it does allow for the whole thing to be really this multi-level kind of thing. If you know, as a listener, if we want it to be.
Sure.
And then when you add in, of course, the video aspect on top of it, I mean, I don't know why more artists, I don't think, take advantage of multi-mediums like this. And that you do, I mean, you know, we can add in that you do acting, and obviously you have the radio show, which I'll bring up. It's excellent with Start Making Sense. Do you see yourself as one? I mean, do you consider yourself like the singer-songwriter, or is it more of just like the artist in the broad stroke?
When I started working on this record, I did a little drawing on the paper, and it was written Jenny Beth, the album in the center, and then it was like branches going all around to different aspects of what I love doing. And then I looked at it for a few days, and after a while I was like, no, that's not right. And I rewrote it with writing Jenny Beth in the center. That sounds very egocentric, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
And then all those branches were going around. But the points, for example, the album was one of those branches. And it relieved me when I found that out, because I felt suddenly the album wasn't the main, big, important element. It was part of a whole ecosystem of things which creatively inspire me, I love doing. And but also, as you said, the TV show, the radio host thing, for me, I'm part of the same thing, because those conversations with other artists influence me, inspire me, I love the idea of seeing people as, you know, the sum of parts, but also still being respected for your unity, you know, having this possibility of, for me, one of my heroes for that is Henry Rollins, because mm-hmm. I think he's done that brilliantly and much, much before me. And the idea of everything he does is so new and different, like stand-up comedy from a writer, a singer in a punk band, you know, solo artist, actor. So all these aspects, or even TV host or radio host, but still doing everything with his own identity, you know, remaining who he is every time he does something. And I always admired him for that. And I was lucky enough to meet him a few times. And I feel that that's basically what my role model in terms of, yeah, being multiple and having different activities and, you know, interests.
Well, it's certainly fun to watch from this side. And Jenny Beth, I love what you're doing. And especially, again, let me compliment you on this record with To Love Is To Live.
Thank you.
At the beginning. It is a powerful, powerful piece that you've put out there. And thank you for doing it. And thank you for taking the time to talk today about it, too. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. Have a great time.
You too. Take care out there. We'll see you around.
See you around. Thank you. Bye-bye.
My thanks, Jenny Beth. The brand new record is called To Live Is To Love. Thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. Before you get out of here, I do hope you hit that subscribe button. Again, you can do it wherever you get your podcasts from. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Just type in Kyle Meredith With. Subscribe. We'll take care of the rest. Brand new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. After that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, that's 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also grab me on the social media spots at Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Jen, and I love horror movies.
I'm Mikey. I'm dead inside, and I also love horror movies.
And we really like to torture our friend Todd, because he hates horror movies.
That I do. And that's why they call me the horror virgin.
That's the only reason we call him that.
I'm not. No other reasons at all.
Whatever. So every
week, we take him through the encyclopedia of horror, the good, the bad, the ridiculously Jack Frosts.
And then we make fun of it more or less.
Or explain its deception. Of feminism.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. That's what I do. That's my thing.
And I'm the funny one. Our episodes drop on Monday, so check us out.